From the House Committee on Business and Labor, and going to open a work session on Senate Bill 202A.
Mr. Chair, Committee Members, Senate Bill 202A is from the Construction Contractors Board. The measure passed unanimously out of the Business and Transportation Committee and out of the Senate floor with a 22 vote and unanimously out of the subcommittee. The measure supplements the definition of contractor in Construction Contractor Board statutes to include a person that for compensation arranges, undertakes, offers to undertake, or submit a bid to clean or service chimneys. And we do have Craig Smith available to answer any questions on these and the following two bills.
The chair of the committee and two members on the committee, are there any questions about this bill, Representative?
What was the need for it?
Craig, why don't you come on up here and shed some light on this for us, just to make sure we know what we're doing.
Chair Schauffler and members of the committee, my name is Craig Smith. I'm with the Construction Contractors Board, and Chair Schauffler and Representative Thatcher. This bill actually had two concepts with it originally. The first concept just changed the location of where the definition of chimney sweeps was in the statute. It was to simplify, make it easier to read. Policy change. There's no implication regarding a chimney sweep whatsoever there, but staff thought that it made it easier to read. We're testing contractors for it now. Some folks indicated that there might be a confusion as the way it was previously. The other concept died in the committee. It was amended out. It had to do with the definition of general contractor and subcontractor. It was a little substantive, and that was really the reason of the bill. So now the purpose of this bill is absolutely just housekeeping and has no policy effect.
Thank you.
Any further questions of the good director here? All righty then. Thank you, Craig. I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, move Senate Bill 202A to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Cameron moves Senate Bill 202A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, so moved. Does this merit 30 to nothing in the Senate? I think this merits a consent calendar.
It was 22.
Oh, forgive me. Oh, 2204. I'm looking at a whole list of, Well, it's 28-2. Senate Bill 204.
Probably should not put it on the consent calendar. Mr.
Anyone want to volunteer to carry this fine piece of legislation? Well, thank you, Representative Thatcher. That's very kind of you. So, all right. I closed the work session, haven't I? Open work session on Senate Bill 204, which did pass 30-0.
That is correct, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 204 also passed unanimously out of the Business and Transportation Committee and the subcommittee. The measure is a follow-up from 2007 legislation that created separate endorsements for licensed residential and commercial contractors. Senate Bill 204 clarifies that the residential bonds will be applied to pay claims against residential contractors and that commercial bonds will be applied to pay claims against commercial contractors.
All right, Craig, why don't you just come up here and sit through the next two? Forgive me for not asking you to do that. Any questions of Mr. Smith while we have him here or anything about this bill?
Mr. Chair, we might as well have him give us another 30
Craig,
seconds.
Spiel. And the next one, just do the next one too.
Chair Schauffler.
In fact, can I do them both at the same time?
I think just to be on the safe side, we'll just do one at a time.
Okay, go ahead.
Chair Schauffler, members of the committee, Craig Smith, Construction Contractors Board, Chair Schauffler and Representative Thatcher, the purpose of this bill is to clarify that the new bonding setup that we have for commercial contractors and residential contractors will work and work smoothly. There was some concern on the part of staff that the way the statute came out for House Bill 3242 last session, the HEC bill that separated residential and commercial contractors, may not have been clear enough with regard to the fact that the Assembly, we believe, wants commercial bonds just to pay commercial complaints. And if, in fact, we ended up in litigation regarding that issue, it could cause some problems for the cost of that bond, could cause some problems for other matters as well. So just as an effort to try to make sure we have a very, very clear statute, we propose this change.
And members, this has been vetted in the Senate committee, on the floor, in subcommittee. Do you have any further questions of Mr. Smith on Senate Bill 204, or any questions at all?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move Senate Bill 204 to the floor. 204 to the
204 with the do pass recommendation. Representative Cameron moves Senate Bill 204 with do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Is there any opposition to put it on the consent calendar? All right. So move. Close work session. Open work session on Senate Bill 206.
I don't want Craig to explain it.
You go ahead and explain it, as always, and then we'll let Mr. Smith talk, and then by then we'll probably all be clear in what we're doing.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Senate Bill 206 passed unanimously from the Senate Business Transportation Committee, the floor, and the subcommittee. The measure makes personal identifier information provided in license or certification application to the Contractors Board confidential and prohibits the disclosure of Social Security numbers, driver's license numbers, date of birth, and other personal information that's required for licensure and outlines exemptions.
Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, Craig Smith, Construction Contractors Board. This bill does have some policy choices for you. We believe that there is some risk on the part of our licensees with regard to the people that own those licensees. Of course, we keep information regarding those owners. We keep their Social Security number, the dates of birth, and Oregon driver's license numbers. These are important because we license businesses, of course, and from time to time, sadly, some companies don't take care of their business practices the way they should, and they run up construction debts. And when that occurs, of course, we keep those owners accountable for those construction debts. Some of those owners have similar names. Interestingly, at the Construction Contractors Board, we've got two Craig Smiths. There are many Bob Joneses. And when we're trying to attach these debts and keep new companies from emerging based upon the past practices of owners of other businesses, we have to have the personal identifier information. So we've done this for many years. The problem is that information today is arguably public record. Dates of birth, Social Security numbers, and driver's license numbers. And, of course, that's not really good news, I think, for the people that provide us with those numbers. We need to keep those matters confidential and just use those for legitimate purposes, and this bill would allow us to do so. That's the first part of this bill. The second part is we also license large companies. Those large companies, in some cases, IBM, and some of the other large big box stores, have hundreds of corporate officers. They have people that own the companies throughout the world. And to date, when those companies get licensed with us, we have to acquire the names and address and personal identifiers of all those people. That, quite frankly, is unnecessary. Those folks don't dump one business and start another one in Oregon, typically, and therefore it's an impediment for their licensure, and it's also probably an unnecessary thing for the Construction Contractors Board. So we believe this is a streamlining initiative to allow certain size companies not to have to give us the names and personal identifiers of all the people that they own. The question became, how do we draw that line? And the way we designed that was to suggest in this legislation that if the company is registered with the Security and Exchange Commission, the SEC, then we would not acquire that personal or the names of the corporate officers of those corporations. Of course, the SEC keeps that information. So if we needed that information, we could make application to them and get that. So this bill does two important things. For smaller companies, it makes the personal identifiers for those corporate officers and limited liability members private. And for larger companies, it streamlines the application process at the Construction Contractors Board.
Any questions, members? All righty.
Mr. Chair, move Senate Bill 206 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cameron moves Senate Bill 206 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Is there any opposition to putting this on the consent calendar? It was 30-0 in the Senate. Seeing no opposition, so be it. So moved. Close of the work session on Senate Bill 206. open a public hearing on Senate Bill 147A.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 147A requires a landscape contractor license for persons that are maintaining ornamental irrigation systems using compressed air. The measure also authorizes plumbers to install irrigation system piping designed by a landscape contractor or landscape architect, exempts property owner employees from landscape contractor licensing for work performed on their property, and also prohibits persons that are otherwise exempt from licensing as a landscape contractor from representing in any manner to be a landscape contractor. You have in front of you, members, two amendments. The -A6 amendment requires landscape maintenance businesses to be licensed under the state's Pesticide Control Act and also establishes an exemption for those whose main or principal work is maintaining lawns or gardens of one- and two-family dwellings under specified circumstances, as outlined in the amendment. And the -A7 amendment removes a double exemption by removing work described under ORS 671540, which is the application of statutes that are related to landscape construction professionals and landscape contracting businesses from activities that are exempted under the practice of landscape architecture.
All right, well, we have some pros and cons here today, but I'm going to call Michael Snyder, Andy Leisinger, and Bill Cross first, and then we'll hear some other opinions. Leisinger, forgive me.
Okay.
Schaffler gets butchered all the time, too, so I feel your pain. Whoever wants to go first.
Well, I think mine's the least of controversy, so if I may.
Please.
I will just read my letter to you folks and Mr. Chairman and members of the Business and Labor Committee. My name is Andrew Leisinger. I'm a landscape architect. I work here in Salem. And while serving as a volunteer on the Compliance Committee of the Oregon State Landscape Architects Board, late last spring, I became aware of a double exemption in the Oregon State Landscape Architects Board and the Oregon Landscape Contractors Board statutes. So this is more of a housekeeping cleanup here. A list of the Landscape Architects Board exemptions under ORS 671.321 parentheses 1 include performance work described under ORS 671.540. I got a couple more paragraphs and then I'll kind of get to the chase of this, but basically what we're asking today is that we remove the ORS 671.321 parentheses 1, parentheses E in the landscape architect statute. And this will kind of minimize any conflicts between the landscape architects board and the landscape contractors board. And it all relates to public, actually, to be specific on this, it relates to public contract requirements. That way it allows the Landscape Architects Board to be able to enforce any kind of discrepancies there. And so that's basically, I think you have a letter from our board endorsing what I'm proposing to do as a more or less a private citizen and a private landscape architect. And all it is just to clean up these two conflicting statutes. So we would just hope that we could omit that and clean it up. I think it's pretty straightforward. And we've talked to Mike with the Landscape Contractors Board, and they support what we're doing also. So
who wants to go next? We'll finish up the panel, and then we'll open it up.
For the record, my name is Mike Snyder. I am the administrator of your Landscape Contractors Board, the State of Oregon. Thank you for allowing me to come in front of you to testify on this bill. Senate Bill 147 initially was a housekeeping bill, more or less, and started out that way on the Senate side. The intent of the bill was to require a license for winterization of irrigation systems, basically in the central and southern part of the state where they use compressed air to inject that air into the system, and which creates a potential backflow issue on
for contamination of potable water supplies and damage to piping in the houses. So we've had some instances that has occurred. We had a rule for many years, in effect, that required that license, but in 2008, we pulled that rule because we looked at the statute and realized we didn't have any real statutory authority to require that to happen. Though we gave plumbers the right to do that in another statute, and so we felt the intent was for a license to be required for this activity. So that was the policy issue on this side of the bill. The other parts of the bill were to clean up some language around what a landscape contracting business really was. Is it the offering of a services of an individual, or is it actually performing the landscape work? We feel it clears it up that it's actually performing the landscape work that requires a landscape contracting business license to do that work. And the rest of it is basically just a matter of trying to clean up confusion that exists in the statute and a housekeeping part. We are aware of the two amendments that are in place here. We are neutral on the one with the pesticide and with the landscape architects. We feel they should be able to regulate their exemptions. We shouldn't be regulating their exemptions, and so that cleans that up. I do have one request, however, in that when the Legislative Council drafted the language for allowing plumbers to install irrigation work, they also put some language in the bill that they actually left out some language that created some issues with the construction contractor statute, and we would like to insert some language that said when operating, that referred to the landscape contracting business license, when they're operating within the scope of that license, rather than just making it a general overall exemption for us. So if you need more clarification on that, I'd be willing to, but I put it in my testimony, it's there in the writing for you.
Go ahead, Bill.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Bill Cross, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association, a trade group of landscape maintenance and landscape contractors around the state of Oregon. And we have been working with the Department of Agriculture, Oregonians for Food and Shelter, and the Oregon Association of Nurseries on the development of language to try and close, or at least partially close, a current exemption that allows, that does not require any licensure for pesticide applicators of home lawns and gardens. And when the pesticide statute went into effect, they of course required licensure for forest applications, agricultural, industrial, commercial. At that time, though, they put in this exemption for home use of home lawns and gardens. Years ago, pesticide applications weren't that prevalent, and now we've seen over the years a lot of applications in residential locations. We're concerned that many of the applicators don't have an understanding of what they're applying and would like to see at least a partial regulation. You'll see that the proposed language in the Dash 6 amendments would require those businesses whose main activity is landscape maintenance of residential one- and two-family dwellings to secure a license with the Department of Ag, which is basically passing a examination. It's not that expensive, but it does require knowledge then of pesticides. However, owners would be able to use unlicensed businesses if the owner provides or purchases the pesticides, reviews the instructions, provides any equipment that may be used by the applicator, so that on a casual basis, businesses could continue to provide that when requested by an owner but they couldn't be out there professionally promoting themselves as applicators unless indeed they've gotten the licensure through the Department of Ag. This was passed 2 years ago. In fact, it came out of this committee and passed on the House side 58-0. It was House Bill 3353. We then couldn't move the bill in time because of the amendment that tried to address this. When you could use an unlicensed business, issue the owner trying to provide, situations where you may have a rental and would like somebody to assist who's not a regular applicator, but as of course their business would be able to, when they're mowing the lawn, also put on some pesticides. So that's the amendment that we finally developed, and would appreciate your support.
Well, they better read the package or they're going to scorch somebody's yard real quick. Then they got a problem. They all do. On the compressed air, if you have it checked out of left, empty backflow valve, then it shouldn't get into the drinking water. But the pipe breaking, I didn't realize that was going on.
Representative Schaffler, what I understand is there's been some incidences that people that are not trained in doing this have been putting pressures of 150 PSI into these systems.
Wow.
You know, they use construction compressors to do this work.
Yes.
And so they have created some backflow issues. If the backflow has any fault at all, it has a potential of going back into the system. We have some instances that have been reported where pipes in the house have broken because it's gone back, and also water going back into the potable water supply. So it has to sanitize it and everything else. Plus, it also breaks the irrigation system, which needs to be repaired then. So we feel that there needs to be consumer protection issues around that.
What is the pressure recommended?
About 80 PSI.
Okay, make sure I don't blow it. And then the amendment with the conflicts, have you talked to the CCB?
Yeah.
Have you got that worked out?
Craig Smith and I have discussed this.
Is it being written yet?
It has not been written. I requested it when I sent an email for this, and I should probably come and see you directly about this. But
as long as you're seeing someone who
right.
takes care of it, that's all I care
I
about.
I need to have it drafted.
Okay. All right. Representative Barton and Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question regarding the A7 amendments. There are really, I suppose, three different bills we've heard from this panel, functionally speaking, the A6, the A7, and the original bill, all quite distinct. I have just really more confusion. I'm just hoping you can clarify A7, which is apparently the least controversial of these. So as I see it, what this bill does, it clearly, the A7 amendment would remove subsection E, which is 540. Now, when I read 540, it seems to me basically to exempt essentially de minimis work from the Landscape Architecture Board, such as, landscaping work that is of casual, minor, or inconsequential nature, et cetera. What is the purpose of this bill? I know this letter. I'm very confused as to what exactly we are doing.
Primarily, the reason is that we both have this exemption, and actually, Mike's probably going to be able to explain it better than I did, because I had to read it over a couple of times, too, after I was going through this whole thing, and understanding that, it's a double exemption, and really you only need one. And it relates primarily to public, what it is public contract requirements. And so when you have a state or a political subdivision that contracts for landscape architectural services, that's also a requirement that it's like architects and engineers, that when you work for a public agency, that's a requirement. And that's also for landscape architects, too. So like the Parks Department or state parks, if they involve contracts with professional services, architects, engineers, landscape architects. That's kind of what we're trying to clean up so that our board, the Landscape Architects Board, can you know, take care of that and not the Landscape Contractors Board. It's really more our situation than the landscape contractors, so we're just trying to clean up those two exemptions. So I don't know if that's clear or not.
Chair, respectfully, and I appreciate your patience. It's not even a little bit clear. I totally do not understand the purpose of this amendment or the substantive effect.
Try and clarify this more.
For the record, again, Mike Snyder, Landscape Contractors Board.
I'm sorry. I appreciate your indulging me. I just don't know what this does.
Vice Chair Martin, I do not have the amendment in front of me, but I believe the intent is this, and I'll try to be as clear as I can. In the landscape architect's statute, which is 671, it's above ours, okay? I don't know if
it's statute.
.321, okay? They reference, in that statute, they reference ORS 671-540.
Yes.
Okay. So they're given an exemption in their statute to ORS 671-540. Well, that is our set of exemptions. So basically what they have done in their statute, it says, let the Landscape Contractors Board provide exemptions for the Landscape Architects Board.
I see.
And we do not feel that's even remotely the intent.
Yeah.
So if they remove that reference to our statute, it cleans it up, lets them control what they do. It doesn't say, let us control what you should do. So that's what I believe the intent of this amendment is. Does that help you?
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Please.
First of all, yes, it does. Thank you. What is the substantive effect, if any, of this bill?
The only thing that happens is that people that that we have in our exemption that says, and he was talking about public.
Representative,
public
you meant the
works.
Amendment. Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry, yes. I meant the proposed A7 amendment.
Of this, that would be that people that were exempted from our statute now would be subject to the landscape architect statute, which is rightfully so, for doing landscape architects work in public, on public projects.
And we're not, as you know, we're not moving it today, so there'll be plenty of time to clarify.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that opportunity to clarify, because my concern is that, essentially, yes, we would be subjecting some who are exempted under 540, who are not accepted under 321, essentially of a de minimis nature that suddenly might have to be licensed, including
people
of a casual, minor, inconsequential nature.
I believe that we have in our statute an exemption for people that are working on projects that couldn't be public works, where a landscape architect is actually required to stamp the plans.
Uh-huh.
If they're listed somehow in our exemptions, which was, we don't have any such requirement, they then wouldn't have to have the landscape architect stamp, which is not the intent of the law. For good law is if it's landscape architecture work, it needs to require a landscape architect's license. And we believe that by them referencing, I think it was unintentional, back whenever this was drafted, and now it needs to be corrected.
But we are
Thank
not
you.
Going to be, with the passage of this bill or amendments, getting rid of the exemption for de minimis, minor, casual
landscape work.
Currently is exempt. That's correct.
You're not changing anything in our statute. You're changing something in the landscape architect statute that referenced our statutes and gave us basically the ability to decide for them who was exempt. And we don't feel like that's our job.
If I hire someone to spread some bark dust, I don't need a landscape architect.
You're exactly correct.
Stamp on.
That's exactly correct.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Thank you.
Representative Holby.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Just going back to the original bill about the winterization issue that you mentioned, using compressed air, and you mentioned the incidences of that having problems because of the use of too much air and somehow getting past the backflow preventer and causing damage. Were those incidences done by a licensed landscape contractor?
We don't think so. I know we had a land. We the only thing I heard was, and I don't regulate that now. That's not something that we have the information about. The water purveyors provide this information to us, and they said that it was done by. They didn't tell us who it was done by, but a landscape contracting business had to go back in and fix the issue for the irrigation system, and then the plumber had to be called in to do the other work. So we don't know.
Well, so do the landscape contractors board, do they have educational requirements that teach their licensed landscapers on how to winterize these irrigation systems?
Chair Schaffler, Representative Holvey. Yes, in our number one, in our examination, it's covered under the examination part, how to do the winterization. Also, there's continuing education requirements to maintain that license.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious, the potential backflow issue that you talked about in contamination to potable water, what's the likelihood of that happening versus just destroying an irrigation system itself? I mean, how... I don't want to diminish the concern to the environment, but how often does this happen? And I'm just going to, from a homeowner standpoint, we have backflow check, we have backflow device inspections. We also have irrigation system inspection. Pay a fee for that through the city. I'm just curious, if the backflow has been inspected, it's working fine and functioning, and somebody blows through my irrigation system, it's going to cause me a heck of a damage. But it's not going to interrupt the backflow device. It's already been checked. Shouldn't. How often does this happen? I mean,
Chair Schaffler, Representative Matthews, I'm not the one to give you that information. All I know is the water purveyors came in and testified on the Senate side of this about the issues that were. I'm sorry they're not here. I don't know if they provide any information to you or not. You may want to talk to them.
You can look in the file and see if there's testimony.
There's testimony on the Senate side on this part of it. So all I know, there's been several cases that has happened, and they're concerned about that.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Please.
And I don't want to belabor a bill that came out 5-0 out of a committee in 29-0, but we're making some pretty significant changes to this bill by these amendments that might not seem like they're huge. Mr. Cross, you and I have talked, and I appreciate the conversation, and I'm not opposed to this concept that we're looking at. But I am curious, in the testimony it says an exemption from licensure for these businesses when applying pesticides that are not restricted use, not using power-operated equipment, and when the homeowner furnishes pesticide products. So all this is driven only by the homeowner must provide this product for there to be this exemption, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that is correct.
Okay, follow, Mr. Chair.
Please.
I just want to make sure that what we're doing is the right thing for all people involved, and we're not just going to put all of a sudden a huge amount of liability onto a homeowner that's going to end up affecting their homeowner insurance or whatever in the event that their landscape contractor. We're not talking about your large business contractors. They're out there and they do a great job, but some of these small independent businesses owned and operated, you know, they do however many homes in a neighborhood. You know, I'm just kind of curious how this is going to impact them in terms of the licensing requirement. I get why you want it for pesticides. I understand that. I just want to make sure that we're completely aware of the impact that we're going to have on all business. Is that
before you answer that, pesticide application, though, is highly regulated. Farmers, ranchers, woodland owners, we keep a close eye on that. And for years, I've been arguing that's not where the problem is in the environment, because those workers and business owners and landowners pay careful attention, because they're applying huge volumes of this stuff, and it costs them a lot of money, and they're very careful with how they apply it. The abuse is not in the ranches and the farms and the woodlands. The abuse is in the cesspool called the city, where people just dump this crap willy-nilly, and I think that's what you're trying to get at. And it generally is the homeowner who thinks, well, I'll just double up the crossbow and then I'll kill twice as many weeds. That's really the problem. So actually, and now the more I think about it, we're entrusting it to the homeowner. We should be making sure the licensed applicator is making sure that this stuff's put on properly. But anyway, I wanted to just get that out there. If we're worried about the environment, which I am too, the problems with the people in the city with their artificially green lawns, I might add. Go ahead, Bill, respond, and I'll shut up, and then we'll let Rip.
No, I respect your love for the environment, Mr. Chair, and I always have.
Thank you. Thank you. Recognizing that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Matthews, unfortunately, we had a landscape maintenance business operator on the Senate side who testified. He's a one-person business, small business contractor who got his Department of Ag applicator's license and has really used it to help market his business because a lot of homeowners get a little uncomfortable once they get outside of their, you know, a few pesticides that maybe they've done a little Roundup or something, but they're a little uncomfortable. And so I think they've used businesses to help them. And the I don't know that we're increasing the homeowner's liability, but clearly we're trying to hold someone responsible and or at least make them aware of what they're doing when they are applying the pesticides. And we have Steve, the contractor, had photos of a business person walking with a tank on his back, smoking a cigarette in sandals, applying this pesticide. I don't know what the wind was, but in a neighborhood. And it was very clear that the individual had no clue what they were doing. And so there is, we'll never be able to directly regulate the homeowner. We have exemptions for them for construction, for maintenance, for all these kinds of things. But the chair is correct. A lot of the recent studies on the wastewater, what we're seeing in the Willamette or the Columbia, are definitely from residential pesticides, the runoff, and this would at least maybe help to some degree.
And before I go back to Representative Matthews, and it's those same homeowners who live in concrete jungles that want to tell farmers, ranchers, and woodland owners how to run their operation when it should be the other way around. And anybody who works in sandals either is too poor to buy boots or they're an idiot or both. Representative Matthews.
I got to check my shoes real quick, Mr. Chair. Okay, I'm good. I appreciate that.
Where do I turn on my sandals?
No, my last comment to the panel, and it can come from either of you, just the information that, and it doesn't happen today, but over the next week, what would be required to fall within compliance of a business that perhaps didn't have that license now, but would need to get that. So maybe just the continuing ed and the fee involved in what would just be required.
Chair Schaffler, Representative Matthews, I want to make one thing clarification on this bill is there's only a certain part of this bill that affects the landscape contractor statute. Okay, so that's the part about the winterization and the house cleanup for that. The pesticide applicators part is a different statute. It's because of our relating clause that this has got amended into this bill. It doesn't affect any policy for the Landscape Contractors Board. So that is a separate license. And it's and having a landscape contractor's business license does not give a person a right to apply pesticides. Okay, so I just want to make sure we clarify that these are two different licenses that are going to be affected here. One is for the pesticide application, which is the amendment which the industry has put in. The other one, the amendment, is with the landscape architects statute, and then our part, which is about the winterization and the house cleaning part, which is our statute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I really appreciate you allowing. I understand that, but the DAS 6 amendment speaks specifically to the licensure for Pesticide Control Act, and so I just would like to know, and Mr. Cross, I'm sure you and I can work that out.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Matthews, Chris Kirby is here from the Department of Ag, and I know would be happy to explain what's involved.
And I might add, those farmers, ranchers, and woodland owners, God bless every one of them, large and small, the vast majority of them are licensed applicators, or they hire a licensed applicator to put these substances on their property. And then there was, when we have a hearing on the next amendment, I would like that business owner to come speak, or one like him or her, and I would like those water payers here to testify.
Perfect.
Because we're going to get this squared away here.
Perfect.
Representative Cameron, then Representative Edwards.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I didn't have a cigarette in my mouth. I did have rubber boots on. And the wind was not blowing on Sunday. So don't post that one on YouTube.
Did you have your safety glasses and ear protection on?
I did have my safety glasses.
I should hope so.
But not ear protection when I'm spraying.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Snyder, I just wanted to ask, if I had a landscape contractor's license, am I able to employ people in my business to do the work that are not licensed? So I could have somebody who's not licensed blowing out a sprinkler system or applying chemicals if they weren't certified. How does that work?
Representative Schaffler, Representative Cameron. Again, I want to make sure we got this clear. The landscape contractor's business license does not give a person permission in any way, shape, or form to apply pesticides. Okay, so that's a separate license. As far as the irrigation system, if an unlicensed employee is employed by a licensed landscape contracting business and under the direct supervision of the licensed construction professional, the person has taken the test and has demonstrated the competency, they can perform the work. So an unlicensed person can do the work if they're employed by the business, which carries the bond insurance and the consumer protection, and they're under the direct supervision of that construction professional to perform that work.
So I made a couple of clarifications then. Direct supervision mean I have to be on site with that person when they're at my house?
No, we have defined direct supervision in rule, which states that the landscape construction professional has to be available by phone, has been given instruction to the person that's going to do the work that day, and if the investigator comes on the job site, unlicensed person has to be able to contact them within 24 hours.
Thank you. And another follow-up on the license issue for spraying. So I contract with a landscape contractor to maintain my commercial property. Excuse me.
Sorry. Chair Schaffler, Representative Cameron. Landscape maintenance is not regulated in the state of Oregon.
Okay. The gentleman who maintains my property does not have to have a contractor's license.
That's correct.
However, he is applying Roundup or whatever he's spraying around my house. Now, does he have to have a license for that?
That is the point of the amendment that is being heard in Dash 6. Excuse me.
If I may follow up,
please.
Prior to the amendment in the Dash 7 today, on my commercial property, he's over there spraying. What is his obligations to the law?
I can't answer that question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, he would have to be licensed by the Department of Ag as an applicator because that's a commercial property. The only exemption is for residential.
Okay, so same person who is working in the yard next to mine, which is residential, does not have to be licensed to apply the same chemicals.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, that's correct.
Thank you.
Today,
before today. Dash 7s. If the Dash 7s
or 6,
Dash 6s, if the Dash 6s are adopted, he would or she would have to be on the residential unless I supplied the chemicals
exactly.
to him.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, that's correct.
Please. If I supplied the chemicals on my commercial property today, could I have somebody apply those chemicals? Could I hire somebody for $10 an hour and have them apply those chemicals?
Well, I'd hope he'd pay more than that.
Okay. Mr. Chair, can you tell me what the living wage is?
I most certainly can. It ain't what we're making, I know that.
Family wage, anybody boots for that.
I defined that on the floor quite clearly, Representative.
What was
Weren't
that?
You listening to
what
me?
What was that?
Buy a house, buy a car, send your kids to the dentist,
that?
Send them to college, have a pension.
Plus health benefits.
$12.50. Okay, so if I was paying them $12.50 plus health benefits,
could I have
a subjective answer.
Could I have somebody apply that was an employee of our business in our commercial property?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, no, not unless they were licensed.
One more question. Please. Could I go out on my own commercial property and put a backpack on and spray my commercial property?
Mr. Chair, I think I would defer to the Department of Agricultural spokesperson, Chris Kirby, because I don't
think there's an
exemption for your own applications at commercial level.
Thank you.
Because I know I would. If I wanted to spray some Roundup or some Crossbow on my commercial property, I would go do it, and so would every other American. So I don't know what to tell you.
And if they wouldn't, they're un-American.
Well, anyway, I know these issues are always balled up in a big ball of string. Representative Edwards.
Thank you. I have a couple of follow-up clarifications in line with Representative Cameron's. On the dash sixes, I want to be clear that if Joe's Landscaping Maintenance Company, who primarily, let's say Joe cuts lawns, currently he is not, there is no licensure requirement. If according to the dash sixes, if Joe were to advertise that or publicly, I can't remember what the word was, but were to publicly say, hey, I can apply certain chemicals to your lawn. I can do your Roundup. I can, apply pesticides. Then he would be required under the dash sixes to get a license to do such, or would be required to get a landscape contractor's license?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, that individual would be required to get a Department of Ag applicator's license. He or she would not need to be licensed by the Landscape Contractors Board. This is simply referring to maintenance, and that maintenance business could be a licensed landscape contractor. Because we're not using the same terminology as you would under the Landscape Contractors Board rules and definitions. We're using the Department of Agricultural terminology, which just simply says if the principal business or the activity of that business is landscaping homes, then that business should be licensed with the Department of Ag unless the applications they become involved in are somewhat casual, i.e., and meet the context of this language.
Yeah, and what I want and what I request and what I hope you will bring us is a flow chart that a fourth grader can read saying who can do what, who needs to be licensed to what, and who's exempted from what, private, residential, commercial. Can you put something like that together for us? I would really appreciate it. Yes, that's what I'm requesting for the next hearing on this wonderful piece of legislation. Representative, you want to follow up here?
Really, really briefly. So there's nothing in the dash sixes that would require landscape maintenance people to become licensed with the Landscape Contractors Board?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, that is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Witt, you've been very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering if it would be helpful to have someone from the Department of Agriculture come up and resolve these questions for us.
Absolutely. We're going to do that in just a moment. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Schaffler. I allow me to just comment at how astonishingly complicated, intricate, and perhaps unnecessarily obtuse this entire statutory framework is. Like, there is no reason why this should be so complicated or difficult to figure out. And if we can't not figure this out in a reasonable time period, I think something's wrong.
It's always this way.
This is particularly bad, I think, Mr. Chair.
Well, I think we'll get from A to B, though. Any further questions and grilling of these good people? Because we are going to be back, and just read it carefully. And don't use words like obtuse, because it frustrates this laborer. Because he didn't go to Harvard. Because they wouldn't let him in. Anyway, so, all right, thank you very much. I would like to... I know I did not apply.
But you can't say they didn't let you in.
long-haired, freaky people need not apply. All right, I would like the good, before I go to the people that don't like the bill, I would like the good people from the Department of Agriculture to come up here and just help us out. Share with us who needs a license to apply, who doesn't, who can advertise, who can't, residential, commercial, agricultural, timber. If you could just kind of briefly, if you can, describe to us what's going on here.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Chris Kirby. I'm with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. My position is as administrator of the Pesticides Division. Amongst the activities of that division are administration of the Oregon Pesticide Control Act, contained in Oregon Revised Statutes, Chapter 634. In many respects, the pesticide law does have some complications. I'll attempt to speak through those complications. That law requires individuals that apply pesticides on someone else's property to be licensed. That licensing includes the business being licensed as a business entity. In order to do that, there is an insurance requirement to protect the property and the property owner. The limits are rather small, $25,000 bodily injury, $25,000 personal property liability. In addition to the insurance requirement, there's an annual licensing fee. That fee has a base of $90. In addition, the employees of that business, even if it's a sole proprietor, are required to be licensed as commercial pesticide applicators. Again, there's an annual license fee. That's $50. In addition to that, there are examinations that individual is required to successfully complete, demonstrating to the department that they have basic knowledge in the lawful and safe use of pesticides for the particular situations that they're involved with. That said, the statute provides that some companies are exempt from those licensing requirements, and their employees are exempt from those licensing requirements. The current language specifies that persons who do not advertise or publicly hold themselves out as being in the business of pesticides and whose main or principal work or business is the maintenance of small or home lawns are exempt from licensing. The Dash 6 amendments, as we understand them, provide greater clarification as to when that exemption applies and therefore when companies are required to be licensed or not to be required to be licensed. Companies that have large trucks and go from door to door, and their business is applying insecticides and herbicides on residential property, are currently required to be licensed. This does not change that. What this does do, though, is provide clarity as to where one draws the line when licensing is not required. And you have before you the various criteria that have been established. The agency does have, by policy, similar criteria, but not identical. And I'd be happy to address any questions that the committee has.
If I have a commercial property, just one building, let's say, and it's got a convenience store in it, and I want to go spray the weeds and the cracks in the sidewalks with Roundup, do I need an applicator's license?
Mr. Chair, you're talking about an application done on your own property, whether it's commercial or residential, and you're using a general use pesticide product, you and your employees would be exempt from licensing.
What if it's crossbow?
Crossbow is a general use product.
I can purchase it at Home Depot.
Correct. A general use product such as homeowners can buy,
right,
and other people can buy at lawn care nurseries, Fred Meyer's, whatever.
Okay.
So this proposal does not change that.
Right.
This proposal speaks to businesses that go from one property to another and have an interest in using pesticides.
Right. Thank you. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hate to go down this road, but so as I understand this bill, essentially a landscape contractor or somebody who does business maintaining lawns and gardens for residential property essentially can apply general use pesticides as long as he gets it from the owner of the property and the owner of the property instructs him how to do it.
Representative Hovey, Mr. Chair, that's my understanding of the Dash 6 amendments, yes.
But it doesn't allow him to that same land. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Please, please.
But it does not allow that landscape business or person to apply restricted use pesticides in that same situation, even if I'm the homeowner and I give him those restricted use pesticides and instruct him how to do it.
Representative Holy, Mr. Chair, that is correct. Restricted use materials are very clearly required to be used by licensed pesticide applicators or persons under their direct supervision.
And one last follow-up. So as a homeowner, is there a definition somewhere on which pesticides are restricted use and which ones are general use?
Representative Holvey, Mr. Chair, the product labeling clearly identifies which products are restricted use.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any further questions, Mr. Kirby? Do you have that flow chart I was requesting somewhere? Who's exempt? Who needs to be licensed? Who doesn't?
Mr. Chair, we don't have quite that concise a document, although we can put one together for you.
I really love concise documents.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Any questions of this good gentleman? Further questions? Thank you. I really appreciate you being here, squaring this away for us, and I look forward to seeing such a document to help us wade through all this. All right. Now we're going to hear from some other folks that have concerns. Corey Knutz, I hope I got that right, Corey. David Sedlake and Peter Padilla. Padilla.
Good morning.
Have we confused you guys enough yet?
Whoever wants to go first. Okay. My name's Corey Knutz. I own Valley Green Landscape in McMinnville. And of course, we're here today. You know, my little bullet points out to make it concise, but there's kind of three or four main issues that we're concerned about with passing of not the 147, but in regards to the pesticide use and all that. Number one, our concerns, to be brief, actually, I think it would actually have a negative impact on the environment. It's kind of cast as a green thing, adding more restrictions. I'll get to the reason why. Also, the affordability to the public. Anytime we have a regulated industry, costs go up, and which directly impacts the homeowner who's going to say, "Well, you know, I can't afford the big service that has all the they're abiding by all the regulations and stuff." And they're going to end up applying it themselves, and that's where we're going to see more sabotaging of these general-purpose chemicals. We're not talking about unrestricted chemicals, which all of us in the landscape industry currently, we don't have access to anyhow. We're talking about Roundup, Crossbow, all the chemicals you guys have been talking about. And it's going to be a real killer on the small business. And I only got word of this kind of by default. The majority, I could say 99% of our industry in the state of Oregon has no idea that this is on the table right now. And basically, what this is proposing is to regulate a product that a child can go into Walmart and buy. And those of us who are applying it every day of the week, however not officially licensed, are going to be restricted. And what happens is, as a small business owner, you know, I only have three or four employees. Many of us, the majority of the industry is comprised of people like us who are small guys, who are trying to make ends meet, The moment you bring down such thing as this, we're facing, it's a lot harder for a company with 3 employees to go through all the hoops, get all those licenses, to apply something that the public can already apply. When you're looking at a larger company that has 100 people, employees, it's not as big as an impact if only 1 out of 30 people have to deal with these hoops that would have to be jumped through. Whereas, man, when I'm down, half my business is down. I'm going down to the ongoing education. And for what we're talking about, we're talking about products that are sold in every box store in the state. And really, when I called contractors, I kind of called about 15 guys around McMinnville. And so I've got a good sampling of just the McMinnville area, which is the only area that I have any kind of contacts with anyhow in my industry. And out of 15 contractors, some licensed, some maintenance guys that I contacted, there was 2 that opposed it, or they're actually that supported this, and the rest of us were immediately opposed just to the restriction, difficulty just with basically the impact of the financial impact of it. The 2 that were supporting it, the conversation didn't go in a way that was, I'm supporting this because it would be green for the environment. It was, we're actually adding a finer screen to the industry to regulate the underbelly of the industry to try to eliminate competition. And that's what's going to be hard on a small business. And that's why I'm here today. There's many of those that I met with that couldn't make it today just due to the fact that, workload. And the reason why the affordability of the public, I kind of touched on that. The reason why is the moment I have to go in and have all the, do all the spraying applicators license, it's much more difficult. Like I said, for a small company, the impact is greater than on a large one when you have many, when you can just hire an applicator that's already licensed. That's a lot easier than having to go to it yourself. And then can we afford that? I know I can't. The industry is already shriveled up right now with the way the last 2 years has gone. And a huge deal here is our industry, again, is not aware of this proposed legislation. And there's no way for them actually to be informed about it. It's only kind of a nice little accident that I found out about this. And I don't think it's fair representation of our landscape industry to slide this through when you could call, and you could go through the phone book and call people, and number one, 90% would be opposed to it. Thank you, Chair.
Go ahead, sir. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I too wanted to speak just to the Dash 6 amendment part of the bill.
Oh, your name for the record.
I'm sorry, I'm David Sedlak. I'm a landscape architect and contractor here in town. Anyway, my concern, again, regarding the terms that are in there, which refers to pesticides and herbicides, and it just has a certain vagueness to it. I know I've seen before that those terms have been interpreted to be rather broad in spectrum. They definitely would include weed and feeds, I believe, which is, fertilizer with some weed killer in it, and I've even heard fertilizer be termed as any plant-altering chemical can be considered something that could fall into this regulation. I'm just concerned about the breadth of that as far as how that could affect the small trades people and applying those chemicals. And we're all in favor of responsibly using the chemicals, and is it going to have a positive effect if you take that out of the hands of people that are familiar with using them to some extent? These are chemicals, again, that are allowed for any homeowner to purchase. If they take it out of their hands and we can no longer even put a weed and feed on somebody's lawn, but the homeowner can, recklessly use Roundup or Caseron or some rather powerful chemicals, actually. Caseron's pretty powerful. I just want to urge that before this goes forward, that some serious looking is done at the language in there and the breadth of that language as far as what it actually would apply to. That concerns me.
Thank you. Go ahead, sir.
Representative Schaffler in committee. Thank you. My name is Peter Padilla. I have Padilla Farms. I'm a small woodlands owner out in Polk County. Also have a landscape contracting business. I'm opposed to this bill, just flat out. no thinking, no reconsidering it. On the face of it, as has been pointed out, this makes no sense at all. Basically, I think you're well aware because of what's been talked about already. We're talking about, we're not talking about restrictive chemicals. Restricted chemicals are already restricted. They already require, licensing and those things are covered. Nobody's opposed with that. If we want to shoot those chemicals, we get the license to do that. We're talking about products, again, that the public can go out and apply properly, or improperly. Seems to me that having an industry in which we're well aware of its use, and because we have the responsibility and the liability to apply that stuff properly, that we do it responsibly, more responsibly probably than the homeowner. Again, I'm opposed to the -A6 because, again, it actually turns this thing on its head and causes a problem rather than solves a problem. I think you're well aware of that.
Let me just get it clear, gentlemen. You're opposed to the amendment relating to pesticide application. You're not here in opposition to the underlying bill. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. The longer we have this conversation, I'm struggling with the amendment myself at this point. And as far as the percentage of Oregonians are unaware of what's on the table, sir, you are exactly right. And there's thousands of bills on the table that they're unaware of, and that is most unfortunate. They have an opportunity to be engaged, and there's all kinds of ways to learn about what's going on here. But I'm glad you pointed that. As far as regulation, deregulation goes, you're right. Regulation does increase costs for business. On the other hand, I think irresponsible deregulation, as we're seeing in this world economy crashing, can cost a whole lot more money. And we've done some things in this building to address that, not all of which I support, but I think it definitely needs to be addressed. So we want to be real careful when we're balancing regulation versus deregulation. My own personal history, I mowed lawns when I was a kid. I started mowing lawns in the evenings and on weekends and when I was laid off, and I did it for a year and a half, mowed, blowed, and goad, cleaned out gutters, trimmed bushes, shrubs, some spread bark dust. I even, yes, I did, apply weed and feed and Roundup on residents' homes. I didn't scorch anybody's property. The world didn't get to come to an end. I never had a complaint. I never had in 8 years of contracting as a builder, I never had a complaint either. So I think there is something to be said about the American entrepreneur who uses common sense. I'm struggling with this amendment. I don't think I'm alone. As far as the desired effect of the amendment to screen folks out, that's certainly not how the amendment's being promoted here, but I think you may have a point. Any questions of these fine, hard-working Americans? Representative Matthews.
Just a point that I just want to thank everybody for testifying, but also realize that you folks could be out there, with the struggling economy doing your job, and you came down here today to testify, and it means a great deal to me that you're spending your time here doing that. So thank you for being here, and thanks for making the phone calls in McMinnville. And it's certainly something I'm going to check in with some Gresham contractors I know too. But I echo your comments, Mr. Chair, and I'll look forward to meeting with Mr. Cross a little more too as well. Very straight shooter, respecting the building, and we'll talk a little further about this. But thank you.
Thank you, Tim Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And gentlemen, just to clarify, and Cora, maybe I'll come back to you. You have a landscape maintenance business. You had 6 employees. I have a house. You do my house. Today you can spray Roundup. Or you can do all those things. I say, would you go down and maintain my commercial property, which happens to be a house, but it's commercial?
Yeah,
can you spray Roundup at my...
Currently the way it is written, no, I can't.
Okay, so you don't have any...
I can do residential...
Amendment, clarify that.
No. But without this amendment, today.
That's what I wanted.
Today, can you go to my commercial property and spray Roundup?
No.
So you don't have any commercial properties. You just do as a landscape maintenance. You said you're a landscape maintenance.
Yes, and construction. I'm a licensed contractor with the LCB as well. But again, like Mike said, that doesn't reflect anything to do with the Department of Ag. Sprayer's applicator's license, totally separate license, which I don't hold.
Okay, but you can at my house spray those chemicals, mm-hmm. but down at my house that's a commercial property, you cannot.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Unless we have that flow chart that fourth grader can understand.
That's what we're going to get, I hope, if it can be done. Personally, if I'd stayed at that, I would have got an applicator's license just to cover my bases. And then you can advertise and open up a whole new avenue of work.
If you're needing to spray restrictive chemicals.
Yes, exactly. Either way, anything I would have had. If I may. You know what? I put a little two-line ad in the paper, affordable lawn maintenance. I tell you, my phone rang off the hook. I to this day, I could be working like there's no tomorrow. So it's a great way to make a living, and it's your flexible schedule. I love it.
Representative. Mr. Chair, Mr. Sadlock, you just said restrictive chemicals. I was referring to non-restrictive chemicals. Roundup is a non-restrictive chemical. Today, you can apply it at my house, but you can't go down to my house that's a commercial property and apply a non-restrictive chemical. Unless you have a license. I mean, the license actually applies to non-restrictive chemicals in certain situations.
That's correct.
It's not just...
He's on you and me.
You're asking.
Yeah.
Corey.
Well, whoever.
Corey, yeah. I cannot apply any of the general use public available chemicals to any commercial property as it is written today.
Thank you. And you can't advertise either.
Mm-hmm. It just ends up, it has to be something like less than 20% of our overall business services. And I don't advertise to... I want to make myself a target.
Right. All righty, then. Any further questions of these good people? Well, stay tuned. Thank you very much for coming down. I appreciate it. I've seen you guys before, actually.
They were here last year.
2 years ago.
Exactly.
2 years ago. All right. Deja vu all over again. Anyone else like to testify on Senate Bill 147A, which we will be having another hearing on in a committee near you? Seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing.
Representative Kim. Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'd ask that we could suspend the rules to allow Representative Escobar to vote on Senate Bill 202A, 204, and 206.
Representative Cameron has requested we suspend the rules for the purpose of Representative Esquivel to vote on Senate Bills 202A, 204, 206. Is there any opposition to that request? Seeing none, Representative Esquivel, how do you vote on Senate Bill 202A?
Aye.
Senate Bill 204?
Aye.
And Senate Bill 206?
Aye.
Thank you, Representative. Anything else for the good of the order?
Aye, sir.
Order.